Welcome to the Justice Report Weekend Review for May 6th to May 11th, 2024. This week's exclusive headlines revolve around the ongoing anti-Israel protests fomenting on college campuses and the bipartisan efforts of government to curtail them. We also zoom in on several instances of interracial violence that continue to plague the nation, as well as an alarming allegation of pedophilia surrounding an influential Jewish screenwriter. Today's first story is the audio edition of the Justice Report's exclusive article, first published on May 6, 2024. A white Ole Miss student was kicked from his fraternity after defending Israel. Oxford, Mississippi. A white frat bro who felt compelled to mock and heckle a female black leftist at the University of Mississippi last week to preserve Israel's interests has officially been expelled from his fraternity following a viral video on social media. The young man, whose identity is being withheld by the Justice Report, now faces threats and possible expulsion from the school, even after conservative influencers promoted his actions as a patriotic gesture in defiance of anti-Zionist rhetoric, fomenting on college campuses. The incident began last week during ongoing pro-Palestine demonstrations at the University of Mississippi, commonly referred to as Ole Miss. Labeled a Zionist frat bro, a viral video of the student, who can be seen wearing a blue shirt and making racially charged gestures towards a visually obese black leftist, quickly sparked a national debate over campus confrontations. On Sunday, however, the leadership of the student's fraternity, Phi Delta Theta, announced in a statement that it had officially cut ties with the student over what it believes to be acts of overt racism. The racist actions in the video were those of an individual and are antithetical to the values of Pi Delta Theta and the Mississippi Alpha Chapter. The responsible individual was removed from membership on Friday, May 3rd. Additionally, Ole Miss announced that it was launching a probe into the student's behavior and is investigating at least one. Some say the student will likely be expelled for his reckless display if sufficient evidence is gathered. Multiple students, including the individual wearing the blue shirt, were then doxxed by the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People on Instagram, which showcased photo collages of those believed to have made racist comments in the video. The controversial pro-black organization demanded their expulsion from Ole Miss, threatening that all of the white students believed to be participating in hateful acts would be publicly identified. The institutional crackdown on white frat bros confronting pro-Palestine demonstrators came amid a quick and concentrated effort by Republican politicians and social media influencers to lionize them for their ill-advised efforts. "The protests at Ole Miss today warms my heart. I love Mississippi," said Republican Governor of Mississippi Tate Reeves on X, formerly Twitter. "Ole Miss taking care of business," added U.S. House Rep. Mike Collins, Republican Georgia. "This video from Ole Miss is beautiful. But guys, please put away the phones," said conservative influencer Richard Hanania, also on X/Twitter. "Be in the moment when you're mocking the Hamas-loving fat girl." "Anti-Israel protesters are having a rough time at Ole Miss," said conservative pundit Nick Sorter to an audience of 1.5 million views on X/Twitter. Patriotic students responded by gathering and singing the Star-Spangled Banner, "I love this country." At the height of the short-lived pro-Israel frat bro craze, video clips of the incident at Ole Miss and another frat-related act of defiance at the University of North Carolina were featured in a Trump 2024 campaign ad. The move, however, was dismissed by some as a cheap way to lull conservative fence-sitters into supporting Israel, namely by offering an avenue to rhetorically own their liberal counterparts. The reason? To shore up support during an unprecedented domestic crisis for the regime in Tel Aviv. These frat boy protests are all in the South at universities that matter significantly less than the Northeastern schools, said anti-Zionist activist Mike Panovich on X/Twitter. "They are spearheaded by Jewish fraternities and TPUSA activists. They're there to give conservatives a vicarious sense of winning, so they'll support Israel." The frat boy protests were not large. They only happened at a few colleges and were accompanied by a sustained media campaign from Khan Inc. the idea that they represent ordinary kids fed up with the left is just a lie. This was a media stunt, he continued in another. The conservative push to make heroes out of white-presenting college kids attacking anti-genocide protesters took another reputational hit after it was revealed that the fraternity behind a highly publicized American flag stunt at UNC was actually a front for Jewish Zionism. The NYU-based Alpha Epsilon Pi, which was credited as having gone out to defend the American flag, lists social awareness and support for Jewish communities and Israel in its mission statement. Additionally, the exclusively pro-Jewish frat has enshrined policy supporting homosexuals, actively celebrates Pride Week, and encourages its members to actively support their gay brothers so they, quote, feel included. The AEPI website states, "Throughout our history, the fraternity setting has served as a learning laboratory, a testing ground for young men who later become leaders in business, education, government, religion, and science." In an interview with Fox News, one of the AEPI frat students at UNC openly asserted he was there first and foremost for our country of Israel. As Israel's war on Gaza continues well into 2024, Palestinian casualties, many of them women and children, continue to mount. At the time of press, over 34,000 have been killed via U.S. taxpayer-funded Israeli strikes, with an additional 78,000 wounded since the war began on October 7th. Since then, public ire surrounding Israel and its abhorrent actions have been stoked internationally, with college campuses serving as the backdrop for the growing political war and its consequences. Those who have spoken out against Israel's alleged genocide of Gaza largely come from those with leftist backgrounds. At the same time, those who champion the cause of Zionism appear to be conservatives lulled into taking action on behalf of Jews or Jews themselves. In April, militarized officers with the New York Police Department launched a sweeping raid of two universities long embroiled in pro-Palestine dissent. Using siege towers and armored vehicles, police conducted mass arrests of over 300 peaceful demonstrators merely for critiquing Israel. The raids were said to have been in response to a recent site visit by Anti-Defamation League CEO Jonathan Greenblatt, who demanded the NYPD or National Guard crackdown on anti-Zionist rhetoric across the board. Similarly, raids by armed police officers, some on horseback, have rounded up and dispersed Israel's critics at universities all around the country. Over 2,000 people have been arrested so far, with many AIPAC-funded politicians applauding and encouraging law enforcement to silence so-called, quote, anti-Semitic, pro-Hamas mobs by force. Up next, we're taking a look at occupied Palestine. Despite a potential ceasefire deal with Hamas on the horizon, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu ordered a long-feared attack on the southern Gaza city of Rafah on Monday. The sudden invasion has dashed hopes of a peaceful resolution to the conflict, as Israeli ground troops and air units target the home to almost 1.7 million civilians trapped in the city. While the situation is tense, let's take a look at the finer details. Unconfirmed reports on the social media app Telegram indicate Rafah has sustained heavy damage to the city, as tanks and airstrikes batter civilian infrastructure from afar. Eyewitnesses to the carnage claim that Israeli defense forces have deployed tanks and helicopter gunships in support of the assault. Airstrikes, artillery bombardments, and other clashes have so far reached Rafah's easternmost neighborhoods, forcing many Palestinians to flee to the southern border with Egypt. Why is this important? Before the attacks were unleashed, delegates from Hamas had accepted a ceasefire deal brokered by Egypt and Qatar. Despite the diplomatic success, Israeli forces attacked anyway, with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu claiming he would send negotiators to continue talks. Israel's sudden decision to invade Rafah, a city containing up to 1.7 million Palestinian civilians, comes one day after the Western world breathlessly echoed solidarity with the Jewish people on International Holocaust Remembrance Day. The conversation behind the Israeli incursion is just as heated. The attack on Rafah moments before a long-awaited ceasefire has so far resulted in worldwide condemnation, with some calling the move a, quote, genocide. The assault on Rafah is genocide in action. Political leaders in the UK must call this for what it is. It's a war crime. International action is needed to halt the attack. We need an urgent vote in Parliament to end the UK's complicity in this and to end the arms sales to Israel, said UK Labour Party politician John McDonnell on X/Twitter. The government must publicly call for an urgent ceasefire and implore Israel to end this heart-rending attack on Rafah. A full-scale attack would be a tragedy, killing countless more innocent Palestinians, displacing families, and making it harder than ever to provide life-saving aid, said the mayor of London, Sadiq Khan, also on X/Twitter. This is Rafah tonight under the heaviest Israeli bombardment yet. Israel is not defending itself, it is committing genocide, said independent Lebanese geopolitical commentator Sarah Abdallah on X/Twitter. A source on the ground in Rafah documented their own experiences during the assault. I am speaking to you from east of Rafah, from within the evacuation zones. The vehicles are starting to enter from the eastern border. The situation is very bad, and the bombing and fire belts are continuing and do not stop. Plane bombing, artillery shelling, lighting bombs, Apache helicopters supporting the vehicles, shooting, and the sound of the vehicles' movements inside the Rafah borders. Oh God, we bid you farewell ourselves. Now let's take a look at the big picture. Israel has enjoyed nearly full-spectrum support from the United States, made only possible by a strong lobbying culture in Washington, D.C., and elsewhere. According to AIPAC Tracker, a nonprofit that shines the light on Israeli money being flowed into U.S. politics, millions of dollars have already been invested in seeding Zionist talking points into American public discourse. Israeli money has found its way into the pockets of both sides of the political spectrum, including incumbent U.S. President Joe Biden, who has received over $11 million from AIPAC at the time of this recording. So far, Palestinian deaths, many of them women and children, have officially reached 34,000 prior to the Rafah invasion. U.S. taxpayer-funded Israeli strikes are responsible for the carnage, which also claims an additional 78,000 wounded since the war began on October 7th. Up next, we'll take a look at an alarming story coming out of Beaver Falls, Pennsylvania, where the tragic murder of a white woman on a nature trail has rocked a community to its core.
This is the audio edition of the Justice Report's exclusive article, first published on May 7, 2024. Today's story: a black man is arrested for the rape and knife murder of a white woman on a nature trail, Beaver Falls, Pennsylvania. After months of tight-lipped investigation, a black suspect has finally been arrested for the horrific knife murder and rape of a white woman who was found dead on a nature trail in January. According to reports, 26-year-old Tyrick Jones of Beaver Falls was officially taken into custody by Beaver Falls Police and the Beaver County Detective Bureau. Jones, who is black, is said to be responsible for the knife murder and forcible rape of 41-year-old Rebecca Lynn Miller. Miller, who is white, was left to die on the Rails to Trails path behind Geneva College back on January 7th. Police discovered Miller's body 2 days after she was reported missing with multiple stab wounds to her neck. Reports state that Miller showed signs of rape, as her pants had been pulled down and partially covered by a jacket. While little information had been given by authorities at the time, police reports later revealed that Jones had been spotted in multiple surveillance camera videos the day of the murder. In addition to several text messages on the victim's phone, police identified Jones as the lead suspect and made an arrest in the case. DNA testing later confirmed a match between DNA left on Miller's body and that found in a sample provided by Jones. During interrogation, Jones denied being in a relationship with Miller and admitted that the two had walked on the trail that day, but he, quote, left her behind to meditate. Jones would then attempt to change his story numerous times, eventually claiming that he didn't remember much that day after he took an unidentified, quote, medication. For the crime, Jones has been charged with felony counts of homicide, rape, and threats of rape. According to court records, he is currently being held at the Beaver County Jail without bail. The death of Becky Miller proved to be a source of controversy in Beaver Falls. Local residents grew concerned after the town council refused to give details surrounding the case. That concern grew to veritable outrage after they had been told that there was no danger to the community, despite the police having no suspects at the time. Those closest to Miller felt that frustration hardest. According to a friend who was one of the last people to see Miller before she died, Jones and the victim may have known each other, possibly through her nonprofit work, adding that her loss is nothing but terrible. "Becky is going to be in my heart forever. I'm going to really miss her. She was special and she didn't deserve this," Jamie Botinovich told Channel 11 in January. To supposedly be walking with a friend in broad daylight, where you can almost be seen from the streets, and commit such a horrible act to such a beautiful person, regardless of what was happening, it's terrible. "It's driving me crazy that nothing is happening," he said at the time. "This isn't that big of a town. If it's in broad daylight, there's cameras everywhere. How something like this can be missed, I don't know." In life, Miller was remembered as a caring friend and compassionate spirit with ties to local charitable organizations. She worked as a catering chef for Crop and Kettle, a faith-based food service organization in neighboring New Brighton. The 41-year-old was said to have plans to eventually open up a church and even start a food distribution service of her own. She wanted to eventually get a loan for a church and start a soup kitchen up. She said, "Even if I have to start it out of the back of my car, I will. I want to help people out," Botinovich said. The city of Beaver Falls, Pennsylvania, like many in the Keystone State, currently faces the grim prospects of racial demographic change. At the time of the 2020 U.S. Census report, the city was home to a white population of only 68.4%, standing face-to-face with a growing black population, 21.7%, and mixed-race population, 6.3%, white residents of the northwest suburb of Pittsburgh continue to suffer despite their vanishing majority. According to statistics from the U.S. Census Bureau, Pennsylvania's white population was the only racial or ethnic group to decrease between the years of 2010 and 2017. Black Americans, like the one arrested for the abhorrent knife murder of Becky Miller, have a documented history of savage acts of violence towards vulnerable white people. In April, a black felon was arrested for the brutal malice murder of white 39-year-old Ansley Gandy in Tifton, Georgia. The suspect, black 38-year-old Wayne Doyle, was said to have been in possession of a considerable amount of drugs and attempted to grab a police officer's firearm during arrest. Last week, the bodies of white 97-year-old Miles Harrington and 94-year-old Ina Harrington were found dead in their own home in Meridian, Mississippi. For the crime, police arrested black 29-year-old Maurice Christie, who was said to have used particularly violent means to kill the elderly couple. Thanks to a surge in black-related killings, local residents claimed their town had earned the unfortunate nickname of, quote, "Murderidian."
Next, we'll look at what world leaders are saying about U.S. college campus demonstrations. On Tuesday, numerous members of the U.S. government, including President Joe Biden, condemned a ferocious surge in anti-Semitism following Israel's genocide in Gaza, using a Holocaust remembrance ceremony to compare U.S. college campuses to, quote, "gas chambers." During a televised event at the nation's capital, U.S. President Joe Biden blamed Hamas for a series of alleged mass killings, rapes, and torture of Israeli Jews, despite evidence that has disproven many of these Israeli-backed claims in real time. Biden said we should not grant hate a safe harbor in the United States and promised to use the full force of the federal government to counter anti-Semitism. He then went on to support the concept of freedom of speech. The event was hosted at the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum's annual Days of Remembrance ceremony at the Capitol Building on May 7, 2024. During his speech, President Biden used his time at the podium to reify his commitment to Israel and the safety of the Jewish people, just hours after Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu launched a bloody attack against the Palestinian city of Rafah. He also voiced his belief that people are forgetting the truth when it comes to mainstream Holocaust narratives. "Never forgetting means we must keep telling the story, must keep teaching the truth. We must keep teaching our children and grandchildren, because we're at risk of people not knowing the truth." My commitment to the safety of Jewish people, the security of Israel, and its right to exist as an independent Jewish state is ironclad, even when we disagree. So what's the big picture? In May of 2023, President Biden announced a plan to use virtually every branch of government, big business, and civil society to ruthlessly suppress First Amendment-protected criticism of Jewish political power and Zionism in the homeland. The 60-page document titled The U.S. National Strategy to Combat Anti-Semitism was created in part by Doug Emhoff, the Jewish husband of Vice President Kamala Harris. The goal of the project is to consolidate power and launch a campaign to silence Americans during a time of increased awareness of international Zionism's influence in American politics. At the ceremony, Biden was joined by Republican House Speaker Mike Johnson, who evoked the so-called horrors of the Holocaust to sound the alarm against anti-Semitism in the United States, which, according to House-sanctioned laws, amounts to even tepid critiques of the Israeli state. Johnson compared U.S. college campuses to Nazi Germany during Kristallnacht and death camps, stating if you close your eyes, you can hear screams coming from the gas chambers. He then received applause for his role in helping pass an unprecedented foreign aid bill that diverted $95 billion to numerous neoliberal projects, including the embattled Ukraine, Taiwan, and Israel. Now, why is this important? Bipartisan praise and support for the Jewish people despite its, quote, genocidal war against ethnic Palestinians in Gaza reveals a growing disregard for the interests of American citizens, who increasingly face repression or even jail time for merely expressing concerns over Israel. Yesterday, 12 sitting U.S. senators were revealed to have penned a mob-style threat to the International Criminal Court, which warned of sanctions if any Israeli official linked to war crimes were to be arrested. Last week, a series of pro-Palestine protests held at elite universities in New York City faced a brutal crackdown by militarized officers of the NYPD. The paramilitary opt to silence demonstrators came after Anti-Defamation League CEO Jonathan Greenblatt demanded the National Guard be sent in during a site visit nearly 1 week prior. Political speech that opposes Israel's actions in the Middle East has faced violent pushback across the United States, especially in places like Texas, Florida, Virginia, California, and Portland, Oregon. So far, over 2,000 American citizens have been arrested during peaceful anti-war protests, with many making comparisons to the lack of police presence during the 2020 summer of racial reckoning. Up next, we'll be going to Los Angeles, California, where a famous Hollywood screenwriter is facing allegations of pedophilia, with his Jewish heritage taking center stage.
This is the audio edition of the Justice Report's exclusive article, first published on May 8, 2024. Today's story. A Jewish Hollywood screenwriter is busted in a live-streamed pedophile sting. Los Angeles, California. A famous Hollywood screenwriter, credited for writing numerous blockbusters like Space Jam, Trading Places, and Kindergarten Cop, was busted allegedly trying to meet a 15-year-old girl for sex. The alarming confrontation was captured by professional live streamers Vitaly and Bradley Martin, who caught the exact moments the Hollywood creative fled from questioning. The video, now seen by millions of users worldwide on X, formerly Twitter, depicts a gray-haired and visibly Jewish man attempting to dodge scrutiny as he sits next to a young white decoy. When a physically imposing Bradley Martin questions him, the Jewish man, who used the name Boris but was later identified as 74-year-old Hollywood screenwriter Herschel Allen Weingrod, admits he met the girl knowing she was only 15 years old. "You're having a piece of pizza with a 15-year-old?" asked Martin. "I messaged her, she was 23 on a dating site," said Weingrod. "We've just been talking and flirting, but it's not a big deal," he continued, timidly downplaying the encounter. When confronted with the age the girl actually provided and text messages to prove it, Weingrod becomes anxious and attempts to force his way out of the conversation. He can then be seen fleeing down the street from the group of live streamers, eventually tagged by clouds of pink and blue smoke shot from an unknown device. "So you're a pedophile trying to meet a 15-year-old," shouted Vitaly during the encounter. Eventually, Weingrod can be seen scurrying inside a parking garage, where the live streamers are met by what appears to be a private security guard. A prestigious London Film School graduate, Weingrod has been cited as the brilliant mind behind numerous Hollywood blockbusters, beloved by American movie fans. Some of the work attributed to him include 1983's Trading Places, 1985's Brewster's Millions, the classic 1990 Arnold Schwarzenegger film Kindergarten Cop, and the runaway box office hit Space Jam in 1996. Online, the outrageous video sparked a discussion surrounding the moral degeneracy of Hollywood power figures like Weingrod. Others highlighted his Jewish ancestry as a factor not to be overlooked. Another Jewish pedophile, shocking, said ex-Twitter user Enora Vishingnik. Is this the anti-Semitic attacks they've been talking about? Said another. Wow, I sure hope he doesn't have a passport to somewhere known for harboring pedos, said another user, hinting towards the embattled Jewish state of Israel. The comment would not be entirely off base. According to a CBS News investigation, many Jewish Americans often flee to Israel when facing accusations of sexual assault or pedophilia. By abusing Israel's law of return, accused Jewish pedophiles can gain a new life under Israeli citizenship and face little to no risk of extradition back to the United States. Weingrod's outing as an alleged sexual predator tracks alongside dozens of stories emanating from the so-called City of Angels, which often implicate powerful people preying on young, impressionable victims. In March, Nickelodeon child star Drake Bell announced he had been sexually abused as a 15-year-old by notorious homosexual dialogue coach Brian Peck. At trial, Peck would receive full-spectrum support from A-list celebrities, including James Marsden, Kimmy Robertson, Taron Killam, Alan Thicke, Joanna Kearns, Ryder Strong, and Will Friedle, which came in the form of letters written to the presiding judge. Ultimately, he would be found guilty, and for the crime of raping a young boy, Peck would only serve 16 months of prison. In 2022, a jury in Los Angeles found influential Jewish film mogul and convicted rapist Harvey Weinstein guilty of rape, forced oral copulation, and third-degree sexual misconduct after more than a dozen women in the Hollywood orbit accused him of sexual abuse. For his litany of crimes, Weinstein was sentenced to 16 years in prison. Prosecutors also achieved similar convictions in the state of New York. Still, thanks to several so-called mistakes made during the trial, one of his rape convictions was overturned in appeal. As America's domestic situation continues to unravel both politically and morally, pedophiles and other sexual deviants have exposed themselves in rather unlikely places. In April, a high-ranking U.S. Navy commander was shot dead in a sanctioned pedophile sting after he attempted to draw a firearm on uniformed police. An investigation revealed that the suspect, identified as retired Captain Bruce Caval Menele, had once overseen medical staff at the infamous Guantanamo Bay prison complex during the global war on terror. In March, a well-respected veterinarian and famous Midwest dog show judge was arrested for over a dozen counts of CSAM possession. According to reports, the man, identified as openly homosexual 38-year-old Adam Stafford King of Elburn, Illinois, had bragged in chats about drugging and raping multiple children, and even planned to molest his yet-to-be-delivered newborn son.
Up next, we're heading to Houston, Texas, where a black police chief has resigned after officials found that, under his leadership, more than 264,000 incident reports have never been investigated. Among the workload include over 4,000 dropped sexual assault cases in the last 8 years. Chief Troy Finner, who is black, tendered his resignation to Houston Mayor John Whitmire after it was alleged that a special police reporting code may have been used to drop cases entirely. An investigation found that officers under Finner were assigning an internal code to cases, which cited a lack of personnel. When Finner apologized and ordered police to stop using the code, it was discovered that as of February of 2024, they were still using it to skirt a significant number of sexual assault cases. Finner joined the department in 1990 and became chief in 2021, 1 year after the 2020 George Floyd Summer of Racial Reckoning. In his place, Assistant Chief Larry Satterwhite has been promoted to acting chief during a city council meeting. Why is this important? The shocking news comes amid a reported decrease in violent crime in Houston, which boasts a 24% decline in homicides. If Houston police have not been properly investigating crimes, however, the numbers are likely much higher. As of March 31, 2023, Houston reported 81 homicides, down to 61 in 2024. It also reported 287 rapes, down from 366, 1,648 robberies, down from 1,549, and 3,328 cases of aggravated assault, down to 3,989 in 2023. According to the White Paper's Policy Institute, Texas is currently being subjected to a statewide massacre, with non-white people officially accounting for 71% of all rapes, 58% of all other sexual violence cases, 76% of all murders, and 72% of all aggravated assaults. There are plenty of similar stories in the headlines, as members of the Black community foisted into important positions in the name of diversity and inclusion often fail to meet up to lofty expectations. In the United Kingdom, a respected Black police officer was convicted for binding, gagging, and raping a girl under the age of 13 at knife point. Despite a protective order being placed against him during an investigation, London police did not immediately fire him. In Las Vegas, Nevada, a prominent youth basketball star turned substitute teacher was filmed brutalizing a young student in the halls of an area high school. The beating occurred over what some claim was the use of a racial slur by his young victim. In Dalton, Illinois, infamous Black mayor Tiffany Henyard currently faces a litany of FBI subpoenas that allege brazen corruption, resulting in millions in unaccounted taxpayer funds. Up next, we'll take a look at a small, wealthy, and white enclave in Florida, where the double murder of two loving white parents has taken a nation by surprise.
This is the audio edition of the Justice Report's exclusive article, first published on May 9, 2024. Today's story. A Black man is arrested for the execution-style murder of two white parents over a basketball hoop, Wellington, Florida. A Black man was arrested for the brutal execution-style murder of his two white neighbors on Saturday, leaving behind four children without a mom and dad. The suspect was a celebrated Black airline mechanic now being referred to as a, quote, sweet man, who allegedly shot in self-defense. According to reports, 63-year-old Norman Scott is now facing first-degree murder charges for the gunshot murder of Tara Marie and Taylor Glenn Jones, two white parents living next door in Wellington's posh Black Diamond neighborhood. Investigators said the shooting took place Saturday evening and may have been motivated by a petty dispute over a basketball hoop in the neighbor's property line. An eyewitness claimed that when he was attempting to render aid to the victims, Scott came outside and confessed to the crime, saying, "Don't worry, I shot them both." Scott was said to have told the witness that the shooting initially stemmed from an argument with his neighbors over the property. He then called 911 and confessed to authorities that he shot both white parents in self-defense after they attacked him, investigators said. Security camera footage proved differently, however. An arrest report said neither of the victims were observed behaving in an aggressive manner or displaying any form of threatening behavior in front of Scott. The video surveillance evidence unequivocally establishes the shooting was completely malicious and unprovoked, read the arrest report. Throughout the ordeal, Tara and Taylor Jones were never observed acting violently, aggressively, or exhibiting any form of threatening behavior towards Norman Scott. The document further states that Scott could be seen pointing at a basketball hoop and waving his hand in Taylor Jones's face, with the victim replying with only non-threatening hand gestures. Police say the video then shows Scott withdrawing a gun and firing at Taylor, who had both hands raised. After firing numerous times, Scott walks over to Taylor and shoots him once more while he's on the ground. He then shoots, kills, and executes Tara Jones in the same manner, investigators said. Both were shot a total of three times. Scott, who is Black, is a veteran airline mechanic for Southwest Airlines, credited with starting a legacy of diverse airline mechanics. According to a now-deleted blog post by Vaughan College, Scott was a graduate of the school and had been working in the airline industry for over 25 years. His daughter,
Courtney Scott, would follow in her troubled father's footsteps. She enrolled in Vaughn College in 2014, quit in 2017, and re-enrolled in 2021. The struggling black ramp agent for Delta Airlines eventually graduated, earning herself a degree in mechanical engineering. According to the Post, she was later awarded by data analytics company J.D. Power for outstanding customer service and currently services aging Pratt & Whitney PW4000 aircraft engines. For the murder of both Taylor and Tara Jones, Scott is currently being held without bail and faces two counts of first-degree premeditated murder with a firearm. He has since pled not guilty, and his next court appearance is on June 3rd. My client has never been involved with violence in his entire life. He's a sweet man, said Brian Packett, Scott's defense attorney, in an interview with WPTV News. We are confident and believe that once the truth comes out, there's a lot more than meets the eye. Meanwhile, those who knew the Jones are still reeling from the sudden loss. A friend of both victims said they recently moved to Florida in 2022, bringing four children between 13 and 7 years old. They're remembered as bright, nurturing souls living for their kids and family. Tara and Taylor were not just partners in life, they were soulmates, read a GoFundMe set up for the late couple. Tara and Taylor poured every ounce of their being into nurturing their children, instilling in them the values of kindness, compassion, and resilience. They leave behind an insurmountable amount of grief for their children. In the wake of their unexpected loss, their children have been left to navigate a world suddenly devoid of the love and guidance that has been their anchor, it continued. According to local real estate websites, Wellington's Black Diamond area is described as an opulent, gated community whose residents earn over six figures on average. Featuring private lake access and a 24-hour manned security post, the looming specter of black violence still found a way to creep into this majority white enclave and take with it two devoted parents. Black Americans continue to stun the nation with a never-ending stream of abhorrently violent crimes targeting white people of all ages. Just last week, a black man was arrested for the January knife point rape and brutal murder of a white woman on a nature trail in Beaver Falls, Pennsylvania. The arrest, which took months to secure, finally came after officers peered through security camera footage and text messages. In Huntsville, Alabama, a black man was arrested following a 10-hour SWAT standoff, which completely shut down the entire neighborhood. Police allege the suspect, 33-year-old Maurice D'Antonio Chatman, shot and killed his two white neighbors with a handgun before barricading himself in his own home.
Up next, we're heading to Canada, where accusations of, quote, Native American genocide at the hands of white people have once again been dashed. After spending nearly $8 million searching for the bodies of Indian children said to be buried on the grounds of Canada's infamous Kamloops Residential School, none have been found, according to a new report. The Kamloops Indian Residential School was hailed as one of the largest in Canada and was used to assimilate Indian children into Western cultural norms. It was run by the Catholic Church until the government assumed control of it in the 1960s. According to a spokesman for the Department of Crown Indigenous Relations, $7.9 million had been allocated for the fieldwork, record searches, and other expenses needed to discover the bodies of Indian children said to be buried in unmarked graves at Kamloops. Despite this, no bodies have been found since First Nation leaders aired the allegations in 2021. Additionally, how the money has been spent has never been disclosed to the public. Evidence of unmarked graves found at Kamloops is based on, quote, disruptions in the ground, after a female anthropologist used ground-penetrating radar at the site. First Nation allegations of genocide stem from the claims of this individual, who said these disruptions could be the likely presence of children. But let's take a look at the big picture. Millions in Canada were outraged after the discovery was officially announced by First Nation leaders in 2021, prompting an outcry among leftists and anti-racist activists. The incident would give way to widespread protests, violence, and arson attacks, which targeted Christian churches and white Canadians for their perceived complicity in the genocide of Indian peoples. According to reports, at least 33 churches have been burned to the ground in Canada since May of 2021, with law enforcement confirming 24 of these to have been the targets of politically motivated arson attacks. Many have speculated that the arsons were launched as a direct response to the allegations of dead children at schools like Kamloops, despite a crucial lack of DNA evidence. But if we connect the dots, false claims of genocide and other acts of racial wrongdoing at the hands of white people appear as a trend that persists across the West. In the United States, a monumental amount of resources has been spent trying to find black victims of an alleged race massacre in Tulsa, Oklahoma. So far, three dig sites have produced only 7 corpses, all confirmed to be non-victims of the massacre and had been buried with historical documentation. Despite this, the black community has persistently called for monetary reparations for having been, quote, victims in the riot, which culminated in 26 black and 10 white dead in Tulsa's Greenwood neighborhood, referred to at the time as Black Wall Street.
Up next, we'll take a look at the latest attempt by state governments to narrow down just exactly what is or isn't, quote, anti-Semitic behavior. North Carolina has joined a growing list of states which is pushing to adopt the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance's, IHRA, working definition of anti-Semitism, which asserts that even mild critique of Jews or their interests is an anti-Semitic act. North Carolina's House passed the Standing Up to Hate and Leading with Our Moral Principles Act, also known as the Shalom Act, in a nearly unanimous bipartisan vote. The passing of the bill came 1 week after the U.S. House voted to codify the era definition into the Civil Rights Act of 1964. The controversial bill cleared the House chamber in just 1 day and is currently awaiting approval by the state Senate before going to Democratic Governor Roy Cooper. The Shalom Act, like many other bills that adopt the definition, has been couched as a way to empower educators and law enforcement by giving them the legal rubric to discipline or criminally charge with hate crime statutes those found to be anti-Semitic. Between the lines, we can see the Shalom Act's primary sponsor is Republican House Speaker Tim Moore, who explained that the bill has been in the works since the events of October 7th. Moore says that the bill's passing has been fast-tracked due to growing pro-Palestine demonstrations held on college campuses in North Carolina, namely UNC Chapel Hill, where a group of Jewish frat bros and conservative influencers recently held a political stunt in support of Zionism. Mass arrests and police crackdowns have occurred at the sites of many of these peaceful sit-ins. Moore claims that the IHRA definition would make it easier to disperse and prosecute anti-Israel dissent. The conversation fueling Shalom's passage comes off unapologetically pro-Israel. Rep. Moore, who is running for Congress this fall, is a controversial figure in North Carolina politics. Like many mainline Republicans, he has defended Israel and its interests, using his station to castigate protesters and others critical of the Middle East situation. The targets of this are clearly Jewish students who are being singled out, who are being intimidated, who are being harassed, who are being physically assaulted, and that's not right, and it needs to be dealt with, he said. In June of 2023, it came to light that Moore was the center of a sex scandal after a lawsuit accused him of having group sex with those seeking political favors. Additionally, it charged Moore with having a years-long affair with the wife of a town councilman. In the headlines, North Carolina is not the only state pushing for increased powers to throttle anti-Zionist rhetoric on campuses. Just today, it was reported that Republican U.S. Senators Roger Marshall, RKS, and Marsha Blackburn, Republican Tennessee, introduced the No Flights for Terrorists Act, which would amend the U.S. code to demand the FBI place pro-Palestine protesters and other alleged anti-Semites on a federal no-fly list. In April, House Republicans in New York put forward draconian new laws that would make it illegal to challenge Israel or Jewish people on public property. Under the auspices of fighting anti-Semitism, the laws would make ripping down kidnapped posters and other pro-Jewish propaganda illegal. In April, Arkansas Senator Tom Cotton equated pro-Palestine sit-ins at New York's Columbia University as a nascent pogrom, urging President Joe Biden to send in the National Guard to suppress criticism of Israel by force. In Texas, Republican Governor Greg Abbott used his office to sign an executive order to punish so-called anti-Semitic rhetoric in Texas colleges. He also referred to the concept of free speech as an enemy, stating that one of his goals was to punish those who espoused pro-Palestine rhetoric.
This concludes the Justice Report's weekend review. We sincerely thank all of our readers, listeners, and social media followers for your continued support. As always, for more news like this, visit justicereport.news and subscribe to our Telegram, X, Twitter, Substack, and Odyssey to keep up to date on all the latest headlines from around the world. See you next weekend.
Thank you.